Welcome to another fabulous episode of All the Vegas, presented by Las Vegas Weekly Magazine in collaboration with The Space. It's where we record this podcast at Polaris and Harmon, just off the world-famous Las Vegas Strip, the home of Monday's Dark. Brock Radke, Mark Chinook, together again. Are you excited?
You were away.
Did you miss me?
And I don't know how we got on, but we got on. It was like one of those things where you're supposed to go to church on Sunday and you don't go, and you don't know what you're supposed to do with your time. That's how it felt while you weren't here. I was like, wait, something is not right. Something is askew. Is that a good word? Amiss.
That is a good word.
Askew. Mm-hmm. I try to use one weird word a show. Askew.
I think you usually do more than one.
Yeah, it's glad to have you back, man. It was weird. Ken was sitting over here, and I don't like Ken very close to me, so it was awkward.
Well, it's glad to have you back, too. We did a show without you, and that was, you know, pretty uncomfortable. I had my dude, Doug Elfman, in here filling in for you, and he's great.
Yeah, that's great. Now I'm fired.
He's a great interviewer and co-host, but it's not the same without you.
Thank you. Good to have you back. I'm glad to be back. Let's go.
Can we talk about why you were gone? Because you were doing a TV show.
Yeah, a little show. Very fortunate. I jumped on to a new project called Holy Moly. It will air in June on ABC, and it's essentially Wipeout meets mini golf. So if you are a mini golf fan, these contestants get their asses kicked while playing mini golf. And it was shot on location in Santa Clarita. It's about 30 minutes north of LA, Burbank, whatever the hell you call it. Big outdoor ranch, huge set, hosted by Joe Tessitore and Rob Riddle. And I play this goofy course marshal where normally I would have a sign that says quiet, but it's the complete opposite.
So you're being the hype man that you are, only it's mini golf times 1,000 on steroids.
Yeah, pretty much. Wipeout meets mini golf. Airs in June on ABC. We shot 10 episodes in 7 days. We shot from 7 p.m. until 6 a.m. So it was a trek. And then having to host, the top-ranked fight at the Staples Center and coming back for the Golden Knights games. It's just been a long week.
I don't know how you do it, man.
Yeah. But Tess is awesome. Joe Tessitore is the voice of the Golden Knights, of Top Rank Boxing, and he was incredible to work with again. And Riggle, the guy's just funny, and he had golf pants on, so it's cool. And the guys wore...
They should call the show Rob Riggle in Golf Pants.
Yeah, pretty much. And they wore those vintage ABC Sports blazers.
Like, oh my God, mustard. Did you get one of those?
No. Oh. Mine was green. But they had the vintage ABC Sports mustard blazers on.
Can you steal one?
Maybe in season 2 if it gets picked up. So everybody has to watch it, because I guess I'm learning TV, right? The way it works is they shoot a season. ABC did a season. It's 10 episodes. At the end of every episode, somebody wins the tournament, which is really cool. And if it does well, it'll go for 10 more seasons, hopefully. We had William Shatner show up. Steph Curry was on set. Who's the guy who plays the flute jazz thing? Kenny G. My favorite hole is the contestants are getting ready to putt. And this hole was called the Distractor. And so they're sitting there getting ready to putt. And a wall would open and reveal Kenny G playing his magic flute.
Oh, my God.
Clarinet. He's a clarinetist. Is that a right word? Clarinetist?
No,
doesn't
he's a
matter.
Sax player.
He's not a sax. Well, maybe. When I think of sax, I think of the one that goes like this. This
horns.
Is long, straight, and
we
black.
We do have an audience in here. Someone's, if we're saying the wrong horn for Kenny G.
It's a saxophone.
Okay.
But it's a tenor. It's a weird sax. It's a weird long, sax. Black,
soprano.
And straight.
Right, it's right. A soprano saxophone.
So he came out. Soprano. So while the golfers were standing there getting ready to
it's
putt.
It's the sexiest of all the saxophones.
Is that because I said it's long, straight, and black?
No. When I was in junior high school, I had to play the baritone, which is the opposite of that.
That's the good-looking one.
No.
The one that our
president
plays?
That's one that Lisa Simpson plays,
yeah.
Theoretically, if she was 6'8".
Which one did Bill Clinton play?
The tenor.
The sexy one. He
plays a tenor.
Obviously,
there's just too many saxes. Anyway, point being, golfers are getting ready to putt, and Kenny G comes out with his hair and a sexy suit on, his going, right in front of them. And you can't keep a straight face when Kenny G jumps on you unannounced. Mm-hmm. Cool show. Holy moly. ABC in June. Just watch it.
That's awesome, man.
I'm totally watching that show.
Me too.
It's mini golf on crack cocaine.
Yeah, that's what television should be.
There is a woman, I'm not kidding, who's probably in her 50s. And you know that Dutch windmill thing? Yes. I probably shouldn't be I'm not talking about anything anymore until it airs.
Have to edit this?
Yeah, probably. I just realized I broke
an NDA
much.
Or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, probably. Fuck me. Delete.
Of course, the day that Ken isn't here is the day we have to do edits.
I'll tell him later.
You're screwed.
No, we'll mute out stuff. We'll just beep me out. No, but it's a great show. Holy moly. Airs in June. When does this episode air? Let's just hold this one until June.
This is late.
Our guest has been talking and we haven't introduced him yet.
Wait, but my question is, you just bleep out KG's name and they'll have no idea who you're talking about the whole time.
We're keeping the Kenny G part.
Yeah. Keeping people in the dark.
That's right.
Luckily, no one listens to this show, so you're safe.
No, we'll delete it. Don't worry.
Well, that's awesome. I'm glad you're back. I'm glad we're together again. And we get to talk about our favorite topic today, which is food.
Hell yeah.
Or more specifically, great Vegas restaurants. Or even more specifically, maybe the hottest downtown restaurant right now, even though it's been open for more than a year in the Arch District. I'm talking about Esther's Kitchen. I love it. I'm obsessed with the pasta dishes at Esther's. The cacio e pepe. Did I say that right?
Yep.
The rigatoni. Carbonara.
We actually just changed that. So now we're doing bucatini carbonara.
Okay, that's fine.
And then
we're
doing the rigatoni on the cavatelli set, which is the sausage rape, which is
That's my one. Right, so that's rigatoni now.
So that's rigatoni. And then we took the cavatelli, and now we're doing that with beef cheek and pot roast vegetables. So it's a really upgraded pot roast.
Pot roast vegetables.
Right? Because that's the way things should taste good.
Pasta is in my holy trinity of foods, in that when I eat really good pasta, I feel like I don't need to eat anything else. Why don't I eat this all the time?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And this is it. I can just subsist on this.
There's a reason why I look the way I do, because I eat pasta all the time.
Pasta's delicious.
This is why I played Lonnie in Rock of Ages and not Stacey Jacks.
Well,
Jacks looks like this wall all ripped and padded, and I'm...
That's a good
I'm
thing
soft and comfortable like a lazy boy chair.
Well, Esther's is easily one of the best pasta spots in all of Las Vegas. And our guest today, as you know, because he's already spoken, is a chef and owner, and he's working on another restaurant coming to our neighborhood, Mark, very soon. James Treese, thank you for being here and welcome to All of Vegas.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
I think you have the best name of all chefs on the planet. If I could be a chef, I would want to be called James Treese.
That is a lie.
You could open
a
restaurant.
Call you a liar, sir.
You can open a restaurant and call it James Treese, and people would be like, this place is the shit.
The funny thing is, because there's actually a big downtown project happening called the Treehouse.
See?
And the funny thing was, I actually own the domain Treehouse Los Angeles, because I was going to open a restaurant called the Treehouse in Los Angeles.
Of course.
Yeah. It's on awesome. Wilshire and Santa Monica, right next to Rustic Canyon, and decided not to because shifty people.
You could add one of those little things to your first name. What's that thing called in grammar? So it's James's Trees.
What are you talking about right now?
Or
Trees's? James's Trees. You could add, so it's a little thing.
What would
an apostrophe?
That restaurant be? James's Trees.
James's Trees.
James's Trees. I'm pretty sure that would be our CBD and
food. Yeah, maybe
line.
We should get into the pot business.
Yeah. What I really should be doing
is growing,
selling
James's
pizza
Trees
in front of every single dispensary in Las Vegas and call it Trees's Pie.
There
boom.
You go.
And just
I'm
like,
telling the ideas from the space that come out of this little back hole mm-hmm. recording studio. I'm telling James's Trees.
We've already had
trademarked
great ideas
that
today.
Shit.
Yeah.
Kenny G and James's
Kenny G's with James's Trees.
So when I lived in LA, I used to see Kenny G all the time at Wally's Wine. And he always shopped in the same section that I like to shop in, which is he likes Pinot Noirs from, Central Coast, California. And so one day I went up and I wanted to act badass. you know, because it's Kenny G and he's, you know, Kenny G. So I go up and I grab a ball of Sea Smoke 10, take it up to the front. You stand in there and they're like $250. I'm just like, fuck, take the card. And he just like looked at me like, nice choice. But at the same time, I was like, ah, I can't afford that.
Just return it, walk out, come back in. Oh, I bought the wrong vintage.
Yeah, yeah, this is the wrong. This is obviously the wrong bottle because it's five times more than I expected to buy a bottle of wine today for.
You are, maybe some people don't know, you're actually born in Las Vegas.
Born and raised, yep.
And a little bit different than a lot of chefs that we talk to and that we know, local chefs that have their own restaurants, because so many people came to Vegas because they got a big job on the Strip or something and then ended up loving it here and wanted to make a home here and ended up opening their own place. You're born and raised, right. Left to go to culinary school, worked all over the world, and still decided to come back to Las Vegas.
I mean, it really is the, like, my route of getting here is the exact same route that every chef takes, because what do? They learn their craft, they go to, you know, went to CIA in New York and then worked around for a long time. And then you go home and you open your own restaurant. The only difference is my like hometown is Las Vegas. It's 2 million people now. You know, when I graduated high school, it was 250,000. You know, when I was growing up, this place was 50,000 people. So I really know Las Vegas as this really small town. And now that people are finding out about Vegas and about the, I mean, the economic conditions are fantastic. You know, the city is on your side. They want you to do business. You know, when, when Cantor's closed at Tivoli Village, the mayor called me and said, don't worry, you're going to be fine. You know, just giving me the old, you know, stiff upper lip and like making sure that if there's anything I needed, that she knew that I could call her and discuss stuff and whatever. And having that kind of connection to our community is something that you would never find in a place as big as LA or New York or, you know, in those markets. And honestly, I love living here. I love being back home. I love that my sister is down the street from me. Mm-hmm. I love that, you know, that there's so many great community aspects here. It just seemed so weird to me when I moved back. Even like, I was like, because I didn't understand, like, why aren't there more off-strip local restaurants, people pushing the envelope? And, you know, I thought either we were crazy or someone just missed a big piece of like what it is to like run restaurants. Mm-hmm. And having operated in what is considered to be the toughest market in the country in LA for 10 years, I mean, you know, we came in 10 years ahead of everybody else.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like what we're doing is not non-standard. It's just done at a very, you know, executable, really good level.
Yeah. When you, before you left Vegas, you did an internship at the Mirage.
Oh, when I was 15. So right. It's kind of crazy because Bart Mahoney set this thing up and he doesn't even remember setting it up. Like for me, it was like a game changer. I was going to high school. My senior year at high school, I only had two classes at Vegas High. I showed up second period, went to my English class, went to my government class, and I was done. So they're like, all right, well, you have to do something because obviously you being out is not a good idea. So what they ended up doing is they set up this internship through my technical place, ATTC, and I ended up going to work at the Mirage. And I got to do the same internship at that point that the CIA kids were going through. So like you had like me being a 15-year-old kid, the first day they fucking send me to the butcher shop, right? Show up at the butcher shop. They're like, it's cold in here. You want to quit, don't you? I was like, is that a big pile of meat? Can I cut that up? And they're like, yeah. So I cut
Rocky
like
Balboa, you know, that meat.
Dude, yeah. I like, this was actually when butcher shops in the hotels did complete fabrication of animals. So, I mean, like one of my first jobs I remember was cleaning tri-tips. And then they're like, cool. Now you get all the shanks. So I got all the shanks from all the sides of beef that they went through. And they're like, take all these, bone them down, show me like this. And like, they honestly, they want me to just take it off the bone, But I really did focus on trying to do that. And so when I got to CIA to go do the butchering class, I was like, got this, you know, whole side of beef, no problem. And, you know, I was the asshole kid, I was the asshole kid in the class who was like, I don't even know why I'm here, you know? So, but it was a good experience. So I had gone through all that training before I went to CIA.
Yeah. Growing up here, and I mean, we're talking about the Mirage. That's kind of the first, the first resort that kind of sparked the way that we have restaurants and casinos now. But that wasn't there before when you were growing up here. Did you, when you thought about making this your career, were you like, I'm definitely getting out of Las Vegas. I don't want any part of this crazy Vegas restaurant thing. I just want to.
Honestly, there was, I never didn't want to be in Las Vegas. It's just my career took me to different places. Like I used to open restaurants for Michael Mina. Mm-hmm. That took me to Detroit, to, you know, Miami, to Scottsdale, to LA, to San Francisco. And I got to experience those places in a very unique way. But at the same time, like, I got to learn from the best at a very close level. You know, like when I worked for Gordon Ramsay, I made his TV shows, right, when I was in LA. So like I made Hell's Kitchen. Like the person who's making that show now is texting me, asking me advice. Like they've been doing this for a long time, right? And then at the same time, you know, when we did Hell's Kitchen Nightmares, I got to travel the country and I got to see why restaurants fail. Like, I mean, that's pretty, like, dead on. Like, hey, like, this is what you need to be doing with your life. So when I took the position in Venice, I was super comfortable. I got bored. It didn't matter how many concepts we had. It didn't matter what it was. I was like, I'm going to go back home. I'm going to open my own restaurant. And just the idea of being able to spend time with my friends, which unfortunately I never get to do, you know, because now that I run this business, it's become a monster. I'm happy to be home. I'm happy to see what's happening here. And I really think like you can take all those experiences and they make me just the person I am. But in no way did I ever think like I gotta get out of Vegas. You know, I had to get out of San Francisco. I fucking hated San Francisco. Like it was too expensive 10 years ago. It was too expensive. And like there were homeless people living in inside my apartment building who did not have apartments. And I lived in the Tenderloin and I walked up and down the same street to go to work at Michael Mina. It was horrible. I had to get out of that town. Vegas, super glad to be back.
I heard you just mention, which piqued my interest, because we've had a lot of great chefs on this show and I consider chefs artists. You know, they're in that world. I'm an actor. I'm in that artist world. I'm goofy. I'm weird. I'm always having to transition and find something new to do. And so you kind of hinted at it. You know, I've been a part of long-running shows, short shows, but I'm always feeling like I have to go and do something else and create something else. As a chef, how often do you feel you have to? Because before we hit record, we were talking about how you switched one of Brock's favorite dishes. Now that you have your own place and it's yours and it's your canvas essentially, and when we walk through that door, it's you. It's just basically a representation of who you are. Right. How often are you tweaking, tooling, changing what we see as the guest in your restaurant? Because the dishes that I read are insane.
Right.
But how often do you say, all right, I'm tired of that one. We got to go somewhere else.
So like, I think there's different thought process. Yes, we're artists and everything. But before that, chefs are craftsmen. Like the same way, you know, you take your craft very seriously. Living in LA, I know a lot of actors who take their craft very seriously. I tell people we make chairs, right? If you make a chair and one of the legs isn't strong, it falls down. A dish is the exact same way. An experience is the exact same way. If you're putting a performance on and one of the legs is missing from your chair, your craft, it falls flat. And people see it immediately, right? Mm-hmm. I think the one thing that we're doing is we're building really, really structurally strong chairs at the restaurant. And we're building chairs, which is obviously kind of weird. But really what it comes down to is every single dish has to have a certain standard of execution in order for it to be great. That's the reason why something like Brock's favorite dish is cacio e pepe. Cacio e pepe is three ingredients. If it's not done perfectly, it's trash. I mean, you just say, all right, this place is stupid. Let's go to the next place, right? So if you don't toast the pepper properly. If you put salt in your cacio e pepe, you lose. Like, the entire dish is seasoned with grated pecorino cheese. Like, you add cheese to that thing until it tastes right. So that's the difference, is like, you know, we do that. So for instance, yesterday we changed our spaghetti recipe. Like, think about that. Like, we've been open and people have said we have had the best pasta in the city for the last year and a half, and we're still changing base recipes, like pasta. Like, that's where we're at. So we try to continue our evolution and perfection of these dishes. I mean, down to the 5 grams of egg or 3 grams of salt or 2 grams of, you know, baking soda that we put into these things. That's how much we're fine tuning them.
So I'm continuing on this path because I'm intrigued. My interest is piqued.
Go for it, dude.
When I see these mega chefs out there who have a series of restaurants, and I don't want to come across as insulting to the chefs that are in those restaurants underneath Puck or right. Ramsay or whatever.
Because they're great chefs.
Because they're incredible chefs. Yeah. And we've interviewed a bunch of them who've gone on to great things. When you're in that type of restaurant, is it almost like painting by numbers at that point a little bit, where you're just creating a dish that has already been created and it's just your job to keep that consistency at a certain place?
Absolutely, 100%. Like, I learned Michael Mina's tuna tartare when I worked at Aqua under Mark LaRusso. And I was teaching people that tartare 15 years later at Michael Mina in San Francisco. Yeah. That exact dish, down to the speck of the bread, the dice on the tuna, nothing changed, mm-hmm. right? And the funniest thing is, like, dishes like that, like Michael Mina's tuna tartare, isn't even Michael Mina's tuna tartare. It's actually, you know, Maroni's, who is his, like, the guy who, you know, basically taught Michael everything he knows. So now when you look at that, and I had to train the executive chefs of those restaurants how to make that tuna tartare perfect every time. That was my job. So, like, there is a level of execution that must be hit. Like, if Gordon Ramsay's, you know, beef Wellington is not Gordon Ramsay's beef Wellington every single time, whether you're eating it at Gordon Ramsay Steak or at Hell's Kitchen, it's wrong. Like, there are no shortcuts taken in those preparations at all. They have to be perfect every single time. With our stuff, we use a looser framework, right? We use a looser framework, and it allows us to be creative and to play with stuff and continue to evolve our cuisine. Does that mean that our bread doesn't have to be perfect every single day? No, it means it has to be perfect or better every single day. And then if it gets better, we have a log that we use where we, you know, and this is crazy, for bread, we measure the temperature of the flour, the temperature of the water, the temperature of the bowl, the temperature of the room. This is down to an exact science. So that way, when we make changes and we get different results, we know exactly what we did and how we can improve. Or if it got better, how do we even make it better? With Michael's tuna tartare, if it doesn't look like the picture in the book every single time, it doesn't work.
So this is something I want to keep, Brock, for you and I, as we bring chefs on, because I think this is a kind of a cool thing to know now. And my next question is, at what point, and again, not to be insulting, at what point when you were the paint-by-numbers chef, did you have that moment behind that line where you were like, I'm fucking out, I got this, I'm a rock star? Because all of our chefs that we've had on this show have gone through what we've just discussed, right? Yeah, where they were.
It's almost the defining thing of a Vegas chef in some ways.
Because you're under Mina or you know, Gina Marinelli, who I love, you know, doing her own restaurant now. Like, they all learned or went through a similar process. But even for me, like, when I'm in a long running show of doing the same show 8 nights a week, there's a moment where I get into my dressing room and I go, you know what? I don't have to do this same show anymore. I'm out. And you take that leap of faith and you move on. What was that for you? When did you say, you know what? I'm out. I'm a rock star.
I don't know. I don't think, number one, I don't think I'm a rock star.
Well,
number
we do.
Two, well, here's my thing. It's like, when I understood the financials of a restaurant in order to make money in Los Angeles on a consistent basis, that's when I knew I could open a restaurant here in Las Vegas. I mean, honestly, because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter how good your food is. If you don't understand how to run a business, don't run a business. We know plenty of chefs out there that are extremely talented that will fail in business because they don't understand the actual parts of that. It's a different thing. Cooking and being a restaurateur are two very different jobs. And I had a really good mentor in Jeff Goodman, who's the CEO. He was the president of Star Restaurant Group, and then he became the CEO of American Gonzo. That man, I still say it to this day, is the smartest human being I've ever met. And really, like, I mean, he'll tell you what to put on the menu, you know? He's like, this is what you need to do. This is what I want to see.
Numbers.
Yeah. And because he can do that. Now it's my job as a chef to then take that and then make it extraordinary. Now, when I could do that on a consistent basis, I knew the cooking part was easy, you know, but then from a business aspect, when you're in a meeting and you're in like around a boardroom table and Jeff's got what I call his money glasses. He's got his New York restaurant tour. Let's go find the fucking money glasses on. And he's staring you down. He's asking you about your, you know, food cost and labor cost percentage and your actual product down to like what kind of carrot you're using on a certain dish. And you just have every answer and you know exactly what you need to do. That's when you know you're ready to run a restaurant. Because it's like, I mean, it's like, how can you do a one person show if you've only done an ensemble cast? You know, and when you really have to get out there and know your shit every single day. And that's what real restaurateurs like Gina and Brian Howard and Dan Cromer, those are what we can do that chefs on the strip don't have to worry about. Yeah, it's a whole different game.
Tell Brian to bring you to a hockey game. He comes.
I know. He texts me all the time. I've never
been. It's like, Chinook, I'm over here. Come say hi.
I've never been to a hockey game here. I am.
Come on, trees.
I am a diehard Kings fan.
Oh.
Going back to the Gretzky, Robitaille, Jari Kurri, Bob Miller in the box kind of days. Those are my that's my hockey time. Like honestly, if I looked at hockey now, I wouldn't even know who anyone is. Like I just haven't even had time. I don't watch football. I play restaurant. Every single day I get to go in and I get awesome. To play restaurant like it's
getting
a fucking
you a hat
sport.
That just says restaurant. We'll make a logo.
He's got it. He's got the hat, right? There He's got is. The hat on there right now.
Your hockey fandom in LA is you're already probably ahead of the average Vegas fan.
I don't
say
even
it,
think
sorry
that.
Everybody,
no,
but
I don't
we
even
all
think
know
that.
It's the truth. We're still learning.
I mean, like for me, like when Marty McSorley got busted for the stick that had too much curve on it, like that was like my defining, like I get hockey. Like that was in a younger time. Now I wish I had time. I need to make time, but I don't. I'm always like thinking about whatever's next, you know?
That's great.
Well, one more thing I want to say about Esther's, because I think probably hasn't been mentioned enough, and I know as somebody who writes about food, we don't write about this element of the restaurant experience enough, but I really think that the service there is what has probably made the biggest difference in like creating this place that locals feel like they have to go to and that everybody's talking about.
Right. And honestly, that is like that came because of my GM, Craig Andreski, who is unfortunately leaving us to go to Colorado. Because he has family there and he just had a kid. But I mean, really what it came down to is we wanted neighborhood hospitality. I don't want like no suits, no ties, no slick guys trying to upsell you expensive bottles of wine. Like we programmed Esther's so that way you couldn't spend too much money in our restaurant. It's like not possible. Like our portions on pasta are way too big, right? On purpose, right? Our bottles of wine are $36 and $40. Like, I mean, we did that on purpose so that way we create a restaurant where the servers are just there to take care of you. And we hired the nicest people to walk through the door. Like Eric Cummings, he's one of our, you know, favorite human beings. He just makes you feel like you're part of something when you're there. And then we have on the back end of that, on the technical service end, we have people like Sonia Stalea, who is going to be our GM over at Ada's. She started as our farm-to-bar person, but she really came from Catania, which is a Michelin-starred neighborhood restaurant in San Francisco. You know, we have Aaron and Paul. I mean, Paul, who does our wine, we call him the wine hunter because he's going through and finding these wines from these little regions in Italy that drink like $300 bottles of wine, and you're getting them for $40. And we tell you that. You know, like, you know, I'm going to make a comparison to another restaurant. This probably won't get cut out. But our $10 Sauvignon Cabernet blend, which is the Ateo, which is our go-to amazing wine that we love, we sell for $10 a glass. If you want to go to the factory kitchen and drink it for $23, Absolutely, go ahead. You know, same glass of wine. You know, like, what's the difference? Mm-hmm. The difference is that we really do value our guests. We really do value our regular people who come in. And once you come to the restaurant, you learn one of two things. Number one, you're a regular. Or number two, this restaurant is not for you. And I completely believe, and I've told this to my servers so that way they know, like, a restaurant chooses its guest. A guest does not choose the restaurant. Because if you walk in and everything's a little too expensive and you nitpick the service and you do that, you know, that's not your restaurant. When you come into my restaurant, you know exactly what you're getting. You know exactly what you're going to be paying for it. You know it's super affordable and we're going to take care of you and you're going to learn something. And we have 40 Amaros that you've never seen. So you should come in and try something that you've never had before. So you get that total comfort. Like, if you don't like something in our restaurant, you don't pay for it. Like, that's it. And we're going to push you to try shit that you don't like. Mm-hmm. How many people have walked in the restaurant and said, I don't like anchovies, but then they're hoovering down anchovy butter. Mm-hmm. Like, just, ah, what's this? Oh, it tastes like liquid Caesar salad dressing. Ah, like, yeah, you know? So, and we're going to keep testing those boundaries and keep being the place that does things right. So that way you don't tell us what you don't like, just tell us what you like and we'll take care of you.
I think also too, that's a confidence in knowing who you are and what you're about. Right. And as I've gotten older in my life, I think, you know, Brock too, you sort of understand your place in the world and you understand the place that your restaurant is in. And yeah. So that's a reflection, I think, more so. So it's like, hey man, this is who we are. Come on and eat. Yeah. Have a good time. And if not, all good, because we know what we're about.
Exactly. Like, people kept saying, why don't you have coffee? Why don't you have coffee? Why don't you have coffee? I was like, why don't you get up, go across the street and buy some coffee so someone else can sit down and eat? You know, that was my tagline to someone. I was like, get up, go around the corner, go to Vesta. Get up, go around the corner, go to Makers and Finders. Like, they have plenty of good coffee over there. Go there.
Yeah.
Leave. You know, we, like, those 20 people at the door are waiting for you to stop having a conversation and get up. And really, when we first started, that was something that people were not ready for, you know, and that was like huge. Now that we do brunch, we have coffee. And we're like, okay, the reason, like, why'd you bring coffee on? Well, because of brunch. Because people want coffee with their breakfast.
They want to wake up.
Exactly. And that's the only reason why.
It's so respectful to hear. I love that shit because it's like, hey, this is who we are. This is what we're doing. And we do it well. So... chill out.
And the cool thing is, if our restaurant's not for you, absolutely, there's a million other restaurants out there. You should go there and give them your best shot. Mm-hmm. And something that, like, a lot, and that's the thing that Vegas, as far as I'm concerned, has been getting pigeonholed for so many years. Right. Where so many people are trying to, like, I'm going to take care of the high-end clients at this. We're going to do this level of food. And I'm like, dude, what about the 2 million people that actually have to eat here every day? Mm-hmm. Where are their restaurants at? I mean, how many times can you go to Carrabba's and Olive Garden before you slam your head against the table so hard that your brains fly out of your fucking head? Mm-hmm. Like, how many chain restaurants do we need? And so now you have people like Gina, who's a fucking genius, who's like, yeah, I'm going to serve really good Italian food in a Summerlin neighborhood that's going to make them feel slightly uncomfortable, but it's going to be really good. Mm-hmm. And that's where she's nailing it. Like, I think Brian, with what he's doing, he's like, I'm going to do Asian fusion, but in a really robust American way that it's huge. I think, like, paid in full. Like, we're going to do Japanese, American, Midwestern street food, and we're going to play Rakim every night and serve you 40s. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, like, these are restaurants that are not kowtowing to anybody. Like, they are, like, these are what we're about. And, like, the more that Vegas gets that, the more we become a legitimate restaurant city, the more, like, the national media and everyone else has to take us seriously.
Right, right.
And meanwhile, people like Josh at Bardot can do food better than Robichon every single night of the week. And just because he doesn't have the name on the door, people, you know, will be like, oh, yeah, it's a good hotel restaurant. No, he's the best chef in the city, and it's a great fucking restaurant.
And just like that, I made a t-shirt that says better than Robichon and delivered it to Josh.
Nice.
I did it on my phone. It's already been sent.
He's not going to like that.
He's dead. Who cares?
You're opening a new restaurant very soon called Ada's at Tivoli Village. You referenced it earlier. Yep. Does this approach that you've just described, how much does that change in this different, very different neighborhood
None.
From downtown?
I don't think it changes at all because we know who we are. You know, if you want chicken in your pasta, we're not your restaurant. You know, Brio's right there. Go there. Mm-hmm. Like, we want to serve you really, really good, well-executed food that we make start to finish. And we want to have you guys be a part of the restaurant. If the neighborhood's into it, the neighborhood's into it. If not, the neighborhood's not into it. And that's okay, because there's going to be plenty of other people who are going to be there. You know, like we don't need to, like, the same thing. Like, I told Carolyn Goodman, I was like, she's like, can you turn down the music? And I looked at her and I said, no. Like, I don't care who you are. Like, this is the level the music's at. Like, yeah, you sat in the corner and we put a sticker up there and said, if it's too loud, you're too old for a reason. Like, that's our restaurant. And that's going to carry over to Ada's. And we're not changing our approach to service, where we take the best care of every human being that walks through the door, but we're not going to change what we do to appease someone who doesn't want what we have. Mm-hmm. And so many restaurants are like, you know, and this was something I dealt with in LA, which was someone looks at a dish and goes, well, how can we make this vegan? How can we make this vegetarian? How can we make this pescatarian? And I look at them and I'm like, why don't they fucking order something else? Right? And so many restaurants that you go to, that's what they're thinking. Like, how can we modify this great dish to turn it into something that someone else would want because they fit into this certain tiny segment of the population? And I'm like, that's not what we do. You know, you'll eat what we have to eat, or you don't. Like, it's like when I grew up, like, you ate what was on the table or you didn't eat. So we run our restaurant that way. Like, we'll take stuff off, but if you start like adding stuff to our food, like, they'll come up, like, your server will tell you in the restaurant, we won't do that. Mm-hmm. Like, at the table, and that's okay.
So the spirit is the same, but certainly this is not going to be a sequel to Esther's. So what are we going to expect food-wise?
So more pizzas. We're using our natural leavened sourdough pizza base, which is out of control good. We really love where it's at. I mean, it's more of an artisan bread dough than it is a pizza dough. And we bake it like 625. So we bake it at relatively high dex.
More carbs for you, bro.
Yes.
Dude, all the carbs.
All the carbs all the time.
Yeah. We're in the carb business.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's your offshoot of this show.
I have that t-shirt.
All the carbs all the time with Brock Radke.
Yeah, so we're doing more of that. We're doing an entire, another brand out of that space called Best Ice Cream, where we're doing seasonal chef-driven ice cream.
Oh, that's a terrible idea.
I know, right?
That's my show.
Using
all the carbs with Brock. Seasonal ice cream with Chinook.
Right. So we're messing around, and like, we just started messing around with a plant-based pistachio caramel ice cream.
Sounds rotten.
Right. So like,
don't do it.
We that's one of those things where it's so like, good. Oh, you gotta have vegan ice cream. And I was like, no, we don't have to have vegan ice cream. It doesn't make sense. And I was like, wait, if we do a certain flavor that works, then it would make sense. So that's where we're going with that. Like, we change one thing, one ingredient. We just take
really
the milk
good
out.
Nuts.
It's a lot of nuts.
It appeases everybody. Great nuts. People everybody love good wins. Nuts.
Yeah, but I think, you know, that's where we're kind of like starting to work on fun stuff for them. But we want to be able to hit everything. But we're not like, I remember when we first concepted this, we're like, oh, are you gonna have dog ice cream? I was like, fucking no. Like, and this is in a room where people are not used to being told no. So like, it's like one of those things where it's like, yeah, I think that's a horrible idea. And you know, like, well, what about this? I'm like, no, that's a horrible idea too. We're not doing that either. You know? And so like, we're building these restaurants, and I say restaurants because I have crazy amounts of ideas that these are the things that Las Vegas needs, like that people are going to want for a long time. And my company name is Timeless Cuisine for a reason, because every single thing that we do can't be a fad. There's no fatty BS food in our restaurants. We just don't do it.
Mm-hmm. No jumping on trends.
No, no pokies, no... I could name off a few things, but I don't want to piss anyone off.
No sushi burritos.
See. Right, exactly. Yeah.
What about, as important to me as the carb element, Mark, thanks for pointing that out, is the drinks. Yep. Because I live near Tivoli Village. I have for a few years now, and I am still searching for my neighborhood bar It doesn't exist yet. I can't find it.
Right.
Can you save me a seat at the bar at Ada's? And are you guys going to be able to stay open a little bit later than others?
So the answer, unfortunately, is no. And here's the reason why. And it's not just because I want to be a dick about it, but it's actually for a reason.
No, I prefer you actually, be a dick. Go be a dick.
We have a service bar license. We have a service bar license, so we can't actually have seats at the bar. Mm-hmm. So the space we took over had a bar, and it was horrific and tragic in almost every way. So we got rid of that.
I remember it.
Yeah. It was very sad and brown. So that had to go. So what we did is...
And now I'm sad and brown.
But here's the thing is that what we're doing... There are so many good t-shirts. Yeah. One of the things that we're doing is we're doing tableside cocktails. Not in a BS like, hey, look at the guy over in the corner making your cocktail. Like, we have a service bar that's going to do... our cocktails, and Sonia, who was our lead farm to bar person and now the general manager, is going out and finding the best bartenders in the city to be our servers, because there's no one more hospitable than a bartender that you're in front of. I like sitting at bars because I like talking to bartenders and I like that experience. Mm-hmm. Now, why wouldn't someone just go out and just hire all bartenders? That's what we asked ourselves. And we're like, well, that makes way too much sense. So what we're doing is we have a beautiful like cart that we're going to bring over, and the person in front of you is actually going to make your cocktails from the cart. And we're like specializing in Barcelona style gin and tonics, which are like those big goblets, like one and a half drink kind of like
I'm going
awesome
out tonight.
Cocktails.
Mark's freaking out right now.
I'm a G&T guy.
But the thing is like, So I fell in love with gin and tonics when I was in Spain. Any bar you go to, gin and tonic. Fantastic. Then I went to San Sebastian, and I went to this place called Ginetoneria. It's got a couple. T-shirt. Yeah, it's amazing. And you walk in, they have 500 gins and about 20 different mixers. And based on the gin that you pick, they tell you what mixer to have, and then they add spices to it, infuse it, and then make your cocktail. And they talk to you about it in Spanish or in Catalonian, and I have no idea. So I'm like, thank you, right?
Double.
Yeah, don't already got
dose. Dose.
Yeah. But I went to this place and I just fell in love with the idea of it. And then I've always wanted to do a gin and tonic bar since then. So what we did is we did our regular cocktails, and then we're doing gin and tonics off of the cart. And that's so it'll be a certain kind of gin. Like, we have some really cool stuff. And then
I just started drinking this gin out of Canada, out of British Columbia, called Empress.
Yeah.
It's an infused gin. It's got lavender or something girly in it, but I don't care. And they pour it over rocks, and it's purple. And then when they pour a nice high-end tonic on it, it turns pink or different color.
Yeah.
Empress. I've been drinking it. Shameless plug for Empress. I'm Canadian. Got to support those guys. They need toonies and loonies up there.
We're going to go get a sponsorship from Empress Gin now for all the Vegas.
Sure. Let's talk. Exactly. Let's I think happen. We should have drinks on all the Vegas.
It's kind of weird that you
don't. I
don't
know why we don't.
I've got a mini fridge that looks like a Marshall amp.
Right.
That's coming. It's going to sit right there. Nice. We'll put booze on it. That'll happen. You'll have to come back.
Absolutely. I'll bring something. I'll bring Sonia,
something
to eat. Sonia will make
you bring
cocktails.
The carbs. We'll bring the booze.
Perfect.
Talk about the Strat, Brock. You forgot to bring up the Strat.
I didn't forget. We just didn't get to it yet. I'm sorry. I'm trying to stake out my spot at Adas.
There is no spot for anybody. You can't go.
No, that's
you can just go and eat and get the fuck out.
I mean, yeah. Our neighborhood is great for restaurants now. It keeps getting better all the time. I know people talk about that Summerlin is kind of the, you know, totally infested with chains, and that is definitely true too, but it's come a long way.
Yeah, and I mean, I think having Chris Bulin even over at Andy Iron that's a major step up for that restaurant. I mean, then like what he's doing there and how he's changing the menu already is pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's a great restaurant.
I mean, so you see him like taking a restaurant that's kind of cruised for a while and then really putting some love into it, and he's doing some awesome things there. So do we wish him all the best and want him to do well? Yes, absolutely. So, but that's the thing is like you have a chef who was badass, and now he kind of got like stuck under the Andres thing, and he had to do the French onion soup for 20 freaking years, mm-hmm. right? And now he can do his own thing. And now you're seeing him explore that and do more interesting food, even at Andy Iron, which is, you know, Elizabeth's restaurant, and she knows exactly what she wants on every menu. Mm-hmm. She's a pro.
Yeah, the Stratosphere, grabbed you up to help with their, obviously, renovating, adding a bunch of new stuff, and you were doing something over there called 108 Eats.
Yes, so it's 108 Eats. Obviously, it's on the 108th floor of the observation deck of the Stratosphere. So if for some reason you find yourself up there, there's really, really good food and paninis. I've been getting razzed by my friends who all like, oh, I want to go check out your place. I'm like, yeah, go ahead. And they're like, wait, it's $15, $18, $20 to get up there. I'm like, yeah, then you got to buy the food. Right? So I was like, you know, if you end up going there and you see it, check it out. It's awesome. I mean, like, I will say this. It is extremely beautiful, build out, super clean. Mm-hmm. And it is, if you took our flavor profiles and then applied it to like a panini kind of shop. Like, so we do like our meatball, like, you know, we do a meatball sandwich at lunch. We do a meatball panini up there. You know, we do a porchetta panini up there because we do a porchetta sandwich at lunch. So we do those kind of things. So if you want to grab that, you know, sandwich while you're up there, that's awesome. We also do, we've kind of rolled out our ice creams there. So if you want to try the ice creams from Ada's before you get a chance to try them at Ada's, you can sneak up to 108 and try those. Also, all the cookies that we've been R&Ding are also going to be at Ada's. Those are at 108 as well.
You tested it out on the tourists, huh?
Well, I mean, I don't even think it's that. I think it's that we are already R&Ding these things for Ada's. And then someone came along and was like, hey, you make really good ice cream. And we were like, okay. And they're like, open an ice cream shop. And we're like, well, we already have all the recipes. We already have all the equipment. All we need to do is put this together. Cool, let's do it. So it made a lot of sense. And, you know, Mr. Sartini and Mr. Arcana, the reason why Steve and Blake wanted that was because they're regulars at the restaurant. Mm-hmm. And, like, trust me, I'm the guy that, like, tells Blake Sartini, I'm like, yeah, no coffee. You know, like, yeah, we don't have coffee. You can go around the corner and grab it. And he's like, cool, awesome. You know, and Steve Arcana is like, you know, I want to bring in, you know, 5 balls of Silver Oak. And I'm like, absolutely. $25 corkage. Mm-hmm. Like, we have no, you know, we don't treat anyone differently, even if they own all the PTs in the world and own the Stratosphere. And like, we earn our customers one person at a time.
Well, I like what they're doing at the Stratosphere.
Yeah.
You know, it's the Stratosphere, so there's always going to be a little bit of joking and kitschiness and stuff like that. And I certainly have made Stratosphere jokes also. But they're amazing. Obviously, they know what they're doing, building this empire of PTs. And the and the different layers of concepts that they have within that brand is pretty amazing just by itself. So
yeah,
keep your eye on the Stratosphere.
Or what's the timeline on Ada's?
We should be open in like 6 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, the floor is in. There's cooking equipment in there. I just need gas. Like, let's go.
Brock has a lot of that. Just hang out with Brock. He'll share.
Oh, Jesus. What about an ice cream shop? What about a cocktail bar? You said you have tons of different ideas. Are we going to see you just continue to expand and do a lot of different Vegas things?
Very, very simply put, yes. I want Las Vegas to compete at a world-class level at every type of restaurant. And if that means I have to open every fucking one of them, we're going to do it. Like, I mean, like, I have at least 3 more restaurants that I really want to do and are trying to put together right now. So I didn't come to Las Vegas to open a restaurant. I came to Las Vegas to open the restaurants Las Vegas needs in order to, like, become a complete city. Right. And I think there are massive gaps in the market where we can, you know, be that for people who miss it. Like, I mean, how many New Yorkers do you know that say you can't get good East Coast seafood here? Like, we're going to do an East Coast seafood restaurant. That's it. Like, that's the end of the story right there. Like, we're going to do it. Like, I mean, there's a 2-hour line to get dirty oysters at the Palace Station every day. Right. So we're going to actually give them, like, this is actually what it should be. You know, this is like at a world-class level, what this can be. Like, that's what I want to do. And I want to do that with a bunch of different things that Las Vegas kind of doesn't have.
All right. It is time to shift gears and give you the Vegas you need. This is where we go around the room and we all give a recommendation of something Las Vegas that we love that you also will love. James, we're going to let you go first.
All right.
What is your pick today?
Paid in Full. It is an amazing restaurant. It's out on South Durango, I believe. Yeah, it's on like Durango. And they're doing a Midwestern version of Japanese drinking food. And it's extremely good. And Jason Olson, who when I was 21 was my executive sous chef at Aqua, is now, he's the chef owner. So like, you look at this guy who's been doing everything and he's like, you know what? I'm going to do my own thing. And this is what he decided to do. And they play 1980s like hip hop. And so you get like, you know, they're called Paid in Full. You'll hear that on the radio. You'll hear great, you know, old school Tribe Called Quest, and you'll drink Bartles and James and Mickey's and hams and, you know, and oldies. You'll drink a 40, you know. It's pretty amazing. Highly recommend it.
Talk about gaps in the marketplace. That is a very specific kind of restaurant.
Yes, absolutely. For the Midwesterner on the run looking for takoyaki.
With, yeah, South Durango.
Eric B. and Rakim in the background.
Just looked it up on my phone.
A hip-hop themed Japanese street food restaurant in Las Vegas.
And recommended dish there is the Mapo Tofu Frito Pie.
Yeah, it says okay, hold on. Eat that. Mapo Tofu Frito Pie.
Eat that.
And it's served in a funky space to match. That's what it says right here when I Googled it. We're going.
Paid in Full.
7225 South Durango, 89148.
We're going right now. Mark?
I'm going to do cheese. I'm going to do, no, well, it's not cheese, but we got this kid who sings the national anthem at the Golden Knights games. He's our regular guy, Carnell Johnson. Just, I've become really great friends with this kid, and I've, you know, learned about him and his family, and he is a gondolier at the Venetian. And I spent a lot of time there with, obviously, when Rock of Ages opened, I was in that building for 3 years, and I had never taken a gondola ride. The Venetian presented him with a golden gondolier thing.
Or?
Just, or, I guess.
It's probably called something better than a gondolore.
It's a gondolore.
That's what it is now.
So that is my Vegas you need. I think everybody should go to the Venetian and take a gondola ride and let guys like Carnell Johnson sing to you. I took it for granted when I was there every day. I'd walk by, you know, I'd go upstairs and grab a bite at a various restaurant, and I never really paid attention. And I was at the Venetian not too long ago to help present him this award that the Venetian was giving him in recognition of his service to the Golden Knights. And I was watching this just line of people, hundreds of people standing there waiting to get on this gondola. And especially now that the weather is nice, it goes outside. Goes in front of the building, comes out to the strip, turns around, and the kid is so talented, and that's my pick. The gondola ride at the Venetian. That's the Vegas you need this week from me.
That's a good pick, and I like the idea of, like, you know, you're a local. Every now and then you need to do these things that are touristy things, and probably they cost too much. But there's a local layer to all of these things that you don't think about if you're just in town for a few days having fun.
Well, and it's not horrible to have to go to the Venetian Palazzo for a night. There's so much to do in that building, and the Palazzo's just been completely transformed lately with all of their new restaurants and decor and vibe. And I hear the Venetian is going to rebrand soon, too. They're changing it from the Venetian to Venezia is the rumor.
I don't know what you're talking about.
We're not allowed to talk about that either.
I have never heard this.
Yeah, bullshit. If I hear it, you heard it 2 weeks ago. They should just call it Parmesan cheese. We'd all go, welcome to Parmesan. You like some more? That was stupid.
Go ride the boats.
Go ride the boats. What's yours?
You know, I like pool clubs. You know I do.
Yeah, you do.
Because I'm that weird guy.
That who sits old, in weird the corner guy. And stares. Give me some carbs and chicks and bikinis.
I like day drinking. That's what it is.
That's what it is.
And there's a new one, a new pool party. It's a little bit fancier. It's pretty nice. You should go check it out. It's called Gemma, which is a weird name. I don't know why they called it that. But it's at the Nomad Pool. So it's at Park MGM, but it's not at the Park MGM Resort Pool. It's on, I think, the fourth floor. It's a rooftop deck, and it's Friday to Sunday, and it's much smaller than what you're used to. If you've gone to a big Vegas pool club, think about like Tao Beach instead of like Encore Beach Club. More intimate, pretty stylish up there. The food and drinks are from the Nomad people. So it's going to be the tastiest Vegas pool party that you ever went to. Big seafood platters. They have these cocktail fountains, they call them, where they just make it and bring it to your little cabana or wherever you are, and you just kind of pour it out of the spout and drink that. Oh, it's good stuff. Good stuff. And the music's a little bit different too. When I went, they had Mark Ronson there because it was a big opening thing, but like the guys that play On the Record are going to be at Gemma.
Okay.
Questlove is going to be there. It's probably, you're going to catch some of the same music you might get at Paid in Full at this place. A lot more soul, R&B, hip hop, house music. Not so much of the EDM stuff. Check it out. Also, I don't think they've started this yet, but Sundays are going to be free for locals at this thing, which is insane. I don't know if that's a good idea or not. Probably not. That's my pick for the Vegas you need. James Trees, thanks again for being with us.
Guys, thanks so much for having me.
I can't wait to come and eat.
I cannot wait. Ada's opening very soon at Tivoli Village. It's esterslv.com and adaslv.com. To keep track of all this stuff and make your reservations, check it out. Monday's Dark is on a roll, a big time roll.
It's going, it just continues to go. I think it's at a place now where it's like a well-oiled machine.
It's super oily.
Every other Monday we're giving $10,000 away to a different charity, and the community's embraced the project. I live for it, actually. I love those 2 Mondays a month where we get to let our hair down and screw around for a cause. And that's what it's all about. Mondaysdark.com. We got one coming up on the, 22nd?
May 6th.
Well, there's an April one.
Yeah, I don't think that this show is going to happen before then, Mark Chinook. That's why I'm reading the dates May that 6th. I typed up.
Okay, perfect. May 6th. That's the next one. But Mondaysdark.com. They sell out. Get a ticket. That's all you need to know.
Just go to mondaysdark.com and get tickets for the next show.
Yep.
You don't want to be the only person who's not in on the fun. That's not the only thing here at the Space. Travis Clover's coming back.
Yeah, the Space has got a busy spring into summer. Michael Winslow, the best way to tell people who Michael Winslow is he's the black guy from Police Academy who made all the voices.
Everybody knows who he is.
Well, not always. I date a lot of young mistresses who are under 20, and they don't know who Michael Winslow is.
That's super weird, Mark.
Yeah, I know. Too much information. But Michael Winslow is coming, and he's badass. He's coming back. It's his second time here. Travis Clower, who's a dear friend of mine, who is Frankie Valli and Jersey Boys, sings his face off. He will be back. TheSpaceLV.com for all space information.
Summer movies. Do you guys like to go? Well, James, I know you never go to the movies.
Chef doesn't go anywhere.
Actually, one of the few things I do on my time off is I'll go to a movie on like a Wednesday at 2 when no one else is there.
Do you guys like to go see like the big popcorn blockbuster movies in the theater?
Yeah, I go to everything.
Avengers.
Hey, what's going on? Speaking of downtown, I'm talking about it. We're not wrapping up yet. Eclipse Theater. I'm hearing all sorts of news about Eclipse.
I don't know.
That's one of the coolest theaters in Vegas, and I hear it's not doing well. The building might go into foreclosure or something.
Yeah. Well, also, Pal Station just put in their fancy movie theater, so that probably took a little chunk out of it, I would guess.
I do like the big seats and the service, not going to lie. Yeah. Lazy this guy is. I just spoke like Yoda.
I like it. Well, summer movies. That brings us back to summer. Now, there's not a Star Wars movie this summer, is there? No. The trailer came out, though.
Trailer came out.
Oh, so good.
Well, summer movies is on the cover of the current issue of Las Vegas Weekly. So you can pick it up and make your movie plans for the season. And then this next week's issue has my interview with Seth Meyers, who's doing stand-up at Encore Theater. And you can read all that stuff, of course, at LasVegasWeekly.com. Hey, guess what? Me and Mark want to hear from you. You who are listening to this show.
All 6 of you.
I would like to receive a message from each of you within the next week. No, seriously, though, who do you want us to bring on as a guest on All the Vegas? What do you want us to talk about? What do you want us to wear? Do you want us to talk dirty to you?
Easy now.
We will literally do whatever you want. Just tell us what to do by shooting us a message at allthevegas@lasvegasweekly.com. How about that? We got an email now.
So high tech. Oh, we have an email.
They're finally giving us.
It mean I can trade in my beeper?
Attention. I won't speak for Mark, but I can't wait to hear from you at allthevegas@lasvegasweekly.com.
No more slipping into your guys' DMs.
Yeah, we get a few of those.
Listen to every episode of All the Vegas on Apple Podcasts, on the Las Vegas Weekly YouTube channel, or just go to allthevegas.com. Thanks to Las Vegas Weekly and to the space. Thanks again to James and Mark. Not you, Ken. You're not here. No thanks to you. But thank you, listener, for listening to All the Vegas. Drive carefully. Come back soon.